Thank you for joining us on this afternoon's program of At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network. Another rainy Tuesday, the 30th of March. And a thank you to our sponsor, Hearst Ranch. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to www.hearstranch.com. And another website is ours, www.heritageradionetwork.com, where you can listen to today's program, as well as all previous programs in our archive. We'll start today's program with the latest news in the Week in Wine recap. April 1st marks the beginning of Alcohol Awareness Month in the United States, and the federal government is launching a series of public service announcements to get parents to talk to their children about underage drinking. 28% of U.S. kids aged 12 to 20 said they drank alcohol in the past month, according to a study released last Thursday by the federal government. The analysis of 2006 to 2008 data also found that underage past month drinking rates were as high as 40% in some states, including North Dakota and Vermont, as the highest. In conjunction with the release of the study, Alcohol Awareness Month in April, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration announced the launch of a new series of public service announcements to get parents to talk to their children about underage drinking. And in the crop report, Bordeaux en Primeur is underway this week, and reactions to the much-hyped vintage of 2009 are split between two camps. After tasting on the right bank in Saint-Emilion, Decanter's wine critic Steven Spurrier claimed that 09 was the best vintage that Bordeaux has ever produced and that the wines are seamless. Their richness, tannins, and acidity are elegantly balanced. While at the same time, journalists such as French blogger Jean-Marc Guérin are suggesting the 2009 may not have the balance and freshness of 05, that it's a vintage that demanded time and money to get it right. We'll see how the reports unfold this week as the tastings continue. And in the market feed, China has supplanted the United States as Bordeaux's top volume market outside Europe, reports WineSpectator.com. The People's Republic imported 13.5 million liters of Bordeaux in 2009. Exports took a thrashing in some of Bordeaux's biggest markets as the recession hit and shipments to the U.S. were down 44%, while U.K. imports were down 33%. Bordeaux has become a symbol of prestige, and China is expected to be the world's seventh largest consumer of wine by 2013, according to a new report by Vinexpo. We're going to take a short break and be back this afternoon with my guest, Michael Hartnell of Le Caprice, New York. Listening to At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network. And again, a thank you to our sponsor, Hearst Ranch, and our producer, Jack Inslee, and engineer, Nat Wiener. And for any listeners joining us this afternoon, please feel free to call in with any questions for my guest, Michael Hartnell, at 718-297-2128. So welcome, Michael. Nice to have you here.
Nice to be here.
Thank you. And we're also here today with Tower Ishu, who is one of the managers, the general manager over at Le Caprice in New York. Hi, Tower.
Hi, darling.
I know you're getting lost in the box outside that we have in front of us.
It feels like home.
Yeah, it feels like home. just a quick correction, 718-497-2128 for our listeners joining us. Thank you. So we'll begin with you, Michael. You are now the executive chef over at Le Caprice, New York, which is in the Pierre Hotel. Mm-hmm. And this is your first foray into the New York market, or U.S. market, I should say.
Yeah, totally. It's been an experience. I came over in June, started to set the restaurant up, finding new suppliers, meeting new friends, finding an apartment.
Yeah, not easy to do in this city, that's for sure.
No, exactly, that's right. Yeah, it's been an amazing experience, and now we've been open since October and things are really picking up.
Great. And what is a bit of your background? Are you working in London prior to New York?
Yeah, I've been working in London pretty much all my life. I was working at Daphne's before in South Kensington. I was the head chef there, and before that I worked with Giorgio Locatelli at his restaurant in Marylebone in London.
Mm-hmm.
And before that I worked at Daphne's again, and I worked at the Ivy before that too.
So you've been with Le Caprice Group for quite some time then?
Yeah, I've been with... I started out when I was 15, 1996, mm-hmm. I had to remember that. I'd done a work experience with my brother who was working at the Ivy at the time. My first shift I ever did in a kitchen, I think, was 7 in the morning till something like 1 o'clock at night.
Hmm.
And from that moment on, I was kind of hooked on cooking. Came out of the day covered in squid ink and smelling of fish. But yeah, it was an amazing experience. It changed my life, really. I mean, I think I would probably be a painter or decorator now if it hadn't been for my brother being a chef.
Cool. And Marylebone, that seems to be maybe a street that has a lot of food inspiration on it.
Yeah, there's a few streets around there that have great restaurants. I mean, Locando is in the Churchill Hotel, and then Wigmore Street has some great restaurants on it, doesn't it, Tower? It's a great affluent area for food around there.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed there's La Fromagerie, which has some great cheeses, and just outside of there.
And the farmer's market too now.
Farmer's market in the parking lot right there. Yeah.
In a schoolyard, yeah. It's like a parking lot.
And in terms of the just general environment that you've noticed in your tenure here so far in New York as a comparative to London, with respect to sourcing and using suppliers and kind of establishing new relationships for suppliers who are providing your produce how has that been?
It was a very new experience for me. You know, we've in London we have fantastic suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
We have great relationships with them. And then when you come to New York, you start on a blank page. It's, you know, okay, so I'm Mr. Fish. This is the fish you want. And then, you know, you have to see if you like it or not. And if you like it, then you stay with him. And then you get another guy saying, no, I'm Mr. Fish. You have to buy my fish. And it's pretty cutthroat. And they'll do anything to do that. And, you know, there's some people there that like to stand back and say, you know what, if you want to come and get the best quality, then you have to come and look for us. And we're lucky that we have very good contacts here, made some good friends.
Sure.
And they pointed us in the right direction with some great suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those, I'd say Pat Lafreda, was pointed to me by Jonathan Waxman.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Of Barbuto.
Yeah.
He's a great guy. I look up to him a lot. His produce that he uses there at Barbuto is very fresh, it's very simple.
And he's been around in the city working long enough to know, you know, who to deal with
exactly,
and who not
exactly,
to.
Exactly. So, I, you know, wise words from a legend in the industry. So,
have you had a chance to go up to Hunts Point, to the fish market up there?
Yeah, a couple of times. Yeah. I went, I was while we were opening a couple of times as well with my fish supplier, Luis Rosso.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up there with a guy that drives a van with all the deliveries up to the fish market after work, you know, pick out the fish, see what's going on, what's good on the market, speak to their buyer. It's good fun, you know. You come back smelling of fish.
Oh yeah, it is good.
I've ruined a good pair of leather shoes going up there.
I went with a bunch of my friends in the restaurant industry after a dinner. I was wearing, you know, black pumps. I have to say, just strolled in there.
Excellent.
Yeah. There was.
I bet you got a few whistles.
Go to the shoe shine after. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a dangerous area as well. You know, you get lots of those carts going around. You get like a little bit of whizzer, and you like turn around and suddenly you're going to get run over by a big tuna.
Right, it's like the taxis. On
yeah,
the,
exactly. But it's good, you know. There's a lot of variety of fish at the market. It's new fish for me as well, you know, and it's exciting to try around with different things, fluke, flounder.
About oysters? Because I remember being in London and just having some fantastic oysters.
Yeah, you know, we've got great estuaries for the oysters, and it's here I find great names for oysters, you know. They're so funky, and it's you know, we're used to the, you know, the Morden locks and the, you know, the lock finds,
a Duchess of Cornwall,
yeah, exactly,
right?
Yeah, you know, the classic names.
Which are classic to you, but not necessarily to us.
No, but they're kind of boring as well, you know. And then suddenly you get a hog's twiddle oyster and stuff like that, you know, whatever. It's good fun. I like it.
It's going to be fun finding them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
got to find the natives.
That's right.
Got to find the natives.
Yep. Are they doing as much farm raising of oysters in England as
yeah,
they are?
Yeah, I believe
here?
So. Yeah. I mean, the quality of the oyster is good. I mean, even a farmed oyster is a great flavour, and we get the most amount in Morden. Morden's fantastic for oysters out there.
And you were telling me a bit about an experience you had in Italy. Was that during a break or a stage or something?
That was while I was working at Daphne's. I made good friends with a truffle supplier called Alberto. Alfredo. Here, forgive me. He invited me to go there to his truffle buyer, and I met the truffle buyer's father, and he said, right, okay, let's go. And he took us out in the van with the dog, Luna. And it was an amazing experience. These guys spend, you know, they're up at 4 o'clock, they go truffle hunting and with the dog, and, you know, they're back by 12, they go back out again. And, you know, it's a very, you know, I would say, you know, lonely life with the dog and the whistling away. But, you know, at the end of the season, they do make quite a bit of money. So
it's like the safari, you know, you're going on a these guys set off in the early hours of the morning.
That's
gone
right.
All day.
And he was speaking mostly to his dog, you know, and there's people walking around him. He was completely oblivious to that. And, you know, as soon as the dog started digging around, he was in there like trying to stop the dog eating it and stuff. That was good fun. He swore a lot in Italian, I must say. The dog was trying to find a truffle that someone had already taken. It's an amazing, you know, they'll take a truffle, but the scent will still be there. The dog will go mad. And this guy would chase in after the dog, and he'd be pulling the dog away, trying to stop it sort of getting to the truffle, and he'd dig around, and there'd be nothing there. And it's, you know, he'd swear a lot in Italian. I won't repeat it because there's probably Italians listening, but, you know, it was quite funny just that every hole he got to, someone had already been there before him. So we got a couple, but not many.
Do you have an affinity for one type of cuisine or the other?
Yeah, I mean, Italian probably, you know, from, if you looked at my resume, you'd say, yeah, I've got an affiliation with Italian. I speak Italian after.
Oh, yeah?
After
that experience.
Yeah, I'm not speaking it on air, sorry, no.
I'm quite
shy about it. But I had to, when I was working at Locanda Locatelli with Giorgio, I started off, there was a couple of English guys when I started, and I was like, yeah, this is great. My girlfriend at the time was Italian. And I was like, yeah, this is superb. You know, I can learn Italian. There's a couple of English guys there. I'll be all right. And then after about a month, the two English guys left, and I split up with my girlfriend, and I was there, and all these Italians were speaking. I was like, oh my God, you know, I don't understand what you're saying to me. But, you know, I picked up so much, and the biggest thing I picked up there probably would have been that, you know, produce, the quality of produce. To
less
an Italian,
is more,
exactly.
Kind of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The dishes that we did there were so simple. Rocket and tuna, you know, that's what it was, but it was the best rocket you could get, and the freshest, finest tuna you could buy. and
it's them too. I mean, they behave more like our partners than our purveyors.
Sure.
The people who supply us, you know, mm-hmm. they really have grown with us tremendously over the years as well, and they've really appreciated us and Michael keeping it that simple as well, without adding more to it, so mm-hmm. unnecessary.
And that's how you kind of explain the story of the menu of La Caprice as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Simplicity is key, I think, and a lot of it is what people want to eat. You know,
sure.
Fish and chips, for example. You know, you can't beat it. Your people that come in and eat fish and chips, you think, you know, you're going to a fine dining restaurant. They come in and see fish and chips. They go straight for it. You know, but you know, we get fantastic cod here from Chatham.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a simple beer batter. I use, you know, a simple, you know, flour and beer, yeah. Lager.
It's also very a lot of fun trying to explain the mushy peas.
Yeah.
You know? How'd you get that sweetness?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, there's a playfulness to some of the terminology, at least, of British food, you know, like eat and mess, and, you know.
Yeah, exactly. God, yeah. And
you
have to
explain that. It is.
You can't.
I'm sure there's stories that are embedded in each one
exactly.
of these dishes.
Exactly.
The bang bang chicken, okay? Yeah. I don't know where that's going, but...
I'm not going to be the one to breach that. I have no idea.
Leave that to me.
Yeah, okay, go on.
Well, I definitely would like to, in the next segment, talk a bit about the seasonal menus that you're preparing for as we come into spring and the Easter dishes, and how we can recommend some wines for our listeners as well to go with some of the dishes that we'll be cooking this weekend or have cooked in the Passover weekend past, and just also your understanding of the consumer in New York and what they're asking for, and kind of looking at that a comparative between New York and London, which is oftentimes in a very similar kind of, I'd say, mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we'll take a short break and be back to discuss that further. Welcome back to At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network with my guests this afternoon, Michael Hartnell, chef at the Caprice Restaurant in the Pijera Hotel, as well as Tower Isho, manager, master of ceremonies at the Caprice, who also oversees the wine list. Yes?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Good
and
fun
tasting. Whose radio voice has been compared to Barry White. So.
Oh, so get those phone calls coming in, please. Any requests?
Well, I'm a big fan of Barry. So Jack, you have any Barry White, we'll close out the program today with one of the songs.
I'll ask for it now.
Yeah.
So going back to just seasonality and sourcing produce, and as we launch into this new season, some dishes on your menu that you're excited about, and some wines from Tower's List, which he's excited about, and pairings that we can use to marry the two.
Cool. Yeah, well, one of the things I've found since I've been in New York is that you can get anything whenever you want. And generally people want everything whenever they want. And mm-hmm. one of those things that an Englishman as myself would take for granted is that we don't get everything all year round. Like, you know, on a corner store, you don't sort of see asparagus, for example, which sure. is something right now that I've started to use from California because it's in season. And I think something like, I think it's 200 million pounds of the season's asparagus comes from California, and it's an amazing flavor. But, you know, you can get asparagus all year round in New York. You can get it from Peru. You can get mm-hmm. it from Mexico. And it's good. But, you know, it's always better when it's from closer to home, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's
yeah.
that's what we like.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, at the moment we've got asparagus on the menu with just a poached egg and some pancetta and some Maldon rock salt. And that's it. A very good olive oil. And very simple. The egg gives it a bit of richness. The pancetta cuts through and gives it a bit of smoky meatness, and the marriage is fantastic.
One of my favorite dishes, actually. Yeah. Yeah. And then Tower, what would you pair from your wine list? Because I know what I think about when I think asparagus, which is usually a difficult item to pair wines with.
Chenin Blancs.
Yeah.
I like the idea of the Vouvray Sex with the asparagus. There is a Christmas there. There is a richness there at the same time too. And Michael will dress it occasionally with the Hollandaise. So the acidity can cut through that and
sure.
Remaining quite aromatic at the same time too. It doesn't get lost in the flavors whatsoever. So the Vouvray certainly, I like the Chenin Blancs quite a bit.
So are you thinking about a still Vouvray or a sparkling Vouvray?
No,
or both?
Still.
A still, okay.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
a still.
Is there one that you're particularly excited about at the moment?
D'Orléans. Where do I get that from? From Tiered Wines.
Uh-huh.
That was just recently added to the list. Thankfully, as well, being on the East Coast, there's a huge influence from Europe, of course, on the wine list too.
Yeah.
Slowly, my palate, I found, has adjusted to the American wines too, which we want to complement in a huge way. So again, it's finding those flavors that are a little lean, perhaps, and that there certainly has been a huge, in my opinion, with American wines becoming leaner and becoming much finer, more feminine, perhaps. Yeah, not so oaky,
yeah.
perhaps, as
more
one would
restrained
experience.
In some
much
ways.
More, yeah.
yeah.
So that's been really good. You know, it's been a nice slow progress from us when we arrived to find all of those. And all thanks to a friend, actually, who introduced me to a wonderful shop over in Dumbo, the
okay.
Blanc and Rouge, and everything
sure,
that I wanted
sure.
was there on the shelves.
Uh-huh.
You know, so then I came across all the wonderful suppliers. And as soon as we met them, they were very kind enough really to keep visiting
mm-hmm.
and showing us what there is in to compare with the Loire wines and then the Spanish wines that we're so used to.
Yeah. And do you find that you're given the, I'd say, change in the economy? I know you kind of came in this opening in one of the toughest years here in New York, at least, or I'd say globally. People who are coming in and asking for certain wines or looking at other options or being more explorative in their choices?
Brilliant options. Price-wise, too, there's a lot of flexibility now from the wine distributors they're seeing. We really had to have to be very clever to make everything attainable. And then where we're located too, we really had to get the message out there that, you know, it's we know the reputation here, but we certainly want to have other neighborhoods visiting and then seeing the cross section of, we inherited a cellar as well, which was very much top end. So I had to very much use that sparingly and just to make those vintages last.
Sure.
But we did find the distributors who came with fantastic prices. And it's not... you really have to remember not to be greedy at all. It's some mark winds up that are going to bring about a culture that is very much attainable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that spirit of just enjoying great wine.
Share.
Which,
even
yeah.
the cellars that we've got really is the markup is very low. So then we want to open up those vintages
mm-hmm.
and they've been sat there for too long.
I enjoyed trying them when we were doing the wine tastings. There's some fantastic wines in that cellar.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was telling me about that, like what you had your hands on down there. And I'm like,
yeah,
wow.
Like, oh my God.
I didn't call you all the time, Michael. I'm
no,
sorry.
I know. I thought you were staggering a bit when you came out of that cellar once.
Now, the you were mentioning before the show a little project that you have going on your fire escape and growing, actually, asparagus. Are you in the Lower East Side?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's not exactly what we've got going on here. I mean, above us right now, we've got probably some fantastic plants. But, yeah, I thought it would... a couple of weeks back, there was a day of sunshine. I thought, you know what, I'm going to go out and buy some plants. I grew herbs in London. I thought, I'll have a go at something else. So I bought some tomatoes and melons and asparagus, and planted the asparagus root, and it was great. And I had three little spears come up.
In how long? In a couple of weeks?
No, you know, asparagus grows like 6 inches in a day.
No.
Yeah, it can do if the conditions are right.
Hmm.
So
so you must have a nice point of sun on your fire escape. Well,
yeah, it's not too bad. I had it like sort of inside. It had lots of sun. I watered them. And I got 6 inches. I was like, yep, fantastic. But I didn't want to eat them. I thought that, you know, I'll wait them to get bigger and get fatter, you know. And they just kept going. And now I have like an asparagus bush, if you like, on my windowsill.
I love it. And then as for melons, what kind of melons would that be?
Well, I don't know yet. I think I killed those. They're kind of like I put too many seeds in one thing.
Yeah.
We meant to plant them like 2 inches apart, but I sort of sprinkled them in and hoped for the best. And now it looks like a bed of cress, you know, like you do when you're a kid, you make cress and stuff. It looks like that. And I tried to move them and now they're all dead. But I've still got the asparagus bush and some herbs.
Well, maybe you can start a whole program on, you know, fire escape gardens, exactly, as opposed to rooftop asparagus gardens. Bushes.
We need to raid asparagus one of those terraces at Mokia Hotel and turn it into
exactly, that. Yeah, why not? We could do this up there. They'd love that.
Definitely. Okay, so back to the menu, focusing on Easter again. So we start off with a poached egg with some pancetta and seasonal asparagus, and then move on to what?
We have an insalata bianca on at the moment, which is this white endive, very simple white endive, white balsamic vinaigrette with a very good olive oil, and shaved pecorino with shaved fennel. So it's beautiful. Very crisp. It's not too complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, it would go great with a nice white wine, maybe even a Chenin Blanc or something like that.
Or maybe an Italian white, actually.
Exactly, or
yeah.
Even a Gavi di Gavi would mm-hmm. be nice. Mm-hmm. That would carry on through as well, I think, maybe to the main courses, where we have grilled swordfish with caponata. Caponata is like, you know, are you familiar with caponata?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, it's like sweet and sour aubergine, so... I mean, swordfish is a fantastic fish. I love it. And
do you? Because I've heard mixed opinions about swordfish. That, I mean, I do particularly like it a lot as well. And the more that I heard people working in kitchens with it, the more it sounded like it was a bit of a dirty fish in some ways.
Yeah, I mean,
overcooked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, like actually, there were worms that would grow inside swordfish.
That's not the only fish that happens with.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
You know,
just got a bad rap. I guess
the fine fish like halibut and monkfish get that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
so that's thing. Something that happens just from being farmed.
No, just from being fish. That's just a natural thing.
Yeah, okay,
you know,
okay.
It's like we get worms, they get worms.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Not that I've never seen.
So swordfish
worms,
doesn't necessarily have. Yeah, I don't want to see mine.
Exactly. So.
So swordfish doesn't necessarily have a propensity have worms. Okay.
No, not unlike any other fish. You know, there may be some perception that it's bad because of the. Like farming for tuna and stuff like that, it damages dolphins and stuff. But other than that, you know, it's a fantastic fish. It's really meaty, and in this time of year, coming into spring summer, it's a great fish to eat. And this time of the year, it's great. So
yeah, no, I love that idea with caponata.
Yeah, yeah. Then obviously we have lamb rack with minted peas, broad beans, fava's. Sorry. We also serve that with a little bit of fregola, which is the
grain.
The wheat grain. And again, obviously, spring lamb.
Yeah.
What more can you say? That's what you want to be eating right now. Nice mint, you know, new potatoes, Jersey Royals. That's what I'd love to have as well at the moment, if I can get my hands on those. I know.
Got to get them here.
To go back to London with a suitcase to come back with some
Jersey
potatoes.
Royals, a type of potato that you only can really find in
Jersey. Yeah. I mean,
not in New Jersey.
Exactly. Yeah. Wouldn't it be great? New Jersey Royal potatoes. Wouldn't it be great? But yeah, I mean, they're a very unique potato. And in this time of year, just, you know, butter, mint, salt, that's it, and it's such a great flavor.
And I find lamb to be a really fun meat to pair wines with, because it's versatile.
Very, no, absolutely. As far, you know, driving away from Cabernet Sauvignon and big Burgundies and such, you can go to Spain in Galicia, in Bierzo in particular. So again, this is one of the trips
for a Mencia.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, delicious, fleshy, luscious, really, really good flavors there with robustness at the same time. And they work wonders with lamb.
It's a great,
So we have that listed too. And it's, and again, very affordable prices. They're way under $100 a bottle, you know. Yeah. So that's a result, I think.
Another region that we I recently profiled on the show was Cahors. And so the Malbec's coming out of there. It would be some great, great, you know, full-bodied...
the southwest of France.
Southwest wines to pair with lamb.
With your swordfish, too, the Pinot Neros. You know, again, you're talking about... pairing the wines with the Pinot Noirs outside of Burgundy and even Piedmont. You know, go to the Alto Adige in northern Italy, and again, there's huge elevations of vineyards out there too, and the minerality content is
And the acidity to kind of, you know, meet that sweet and sourness of the Caponata.
Sure.
You know, they're great fun. Again, those we found here. I was really pleased to have found those wines here, so we have those, you know, we have those, and we're not afraid to open up any of the wines, really. We have a few listed that we offer by the glass, but then we're not shy at all of opening something, and then we'll finish it,
right
which I have done.
And so are you hosting anything special on Sunday for Easter? Are you doing a special, this is the menu,
so we have a brunch.
You have a brunch, okay,
which is something that we do every Sunday, which I enjoy. I love Sundays. I work all day on a Sunday. I come in at 7 o'clock.
Good for you.
We'll have
our traditional roast beef as
That's
well.
That's it. We have roast beef, and I look forward to that.
And like, all the trimmings.
So we have the Yorkshire puddings and you know, horseradish sauce. And
so Easter in England is
no. This is just what we normally do every Sunday.
Then
we have this normally as well as our menu that we're doing at the moment, which is for Easter. But yeah, Sundays are great.
Cool. So some traditional offerings every Sunday. Exactly. And then
we're extending it to Saturday as well, I think, in good time. We're going to be doing the brunch on Saturdays also.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a longer day. It's just starting early at 11:30 and going
through.
Yeah,
a lot of people want to have brunch on a Saturday uptown, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And the way that the city seems is there have been quite a few tourists around still. So taking advantage of those uptown weekends.
Mm. Well, it's a bit of a novelty for us in London brunch, I think. You know, Caprice has a brunch on a Sunday, but there's not many places, you know, that...
We do brunch.
Exactly. And I love it, you know. You have a big night on a Friday, and then, you know, and you know, get up and have sausage, eggs. But you
it's
want
a very confusing
4:00.
Meal. I'm conflicted about brunch, but yours sounds wonderful, so
yeah,
I'll
you know,
certainly
I think
make it there.
It's breakfast when you get up, which is like 3:00 if you've had a big night.
Yeah, nice curried haddock, you know, on rice
exactly.
On a Saturday afternoon, getting your strength back up for another Saturday.
That's right.
Well, we'll have our listeners point to your website to look more at your menus, your wine menus, and your dinner menus, lunch menus online, which is what exactly?
www.capriceny. Yeah,
capriceny.com.
Thanks, Tal.
Great. Well, unfortunately, we have to wrap up. There's really no place to go on this rainy Tuesday, but we have another show coming up. So I just want to thank you so much for joining.
Thank you very much.
Tower and Michael, pleasure. And for our listeners, this is Michael Hartnell and Tower Isho from the Caprice, New York, which is in the Pierre Hotel on 5th Avenue and 60th Street. 61st Street.
60th and
61st. Okay. So love to do another show with you sometime in the future.
Looking forward to already.
Welcome. I hope you continue to kind of embrace the New York lifestyle.
Go and get an allotment in Central Park.
That's right, yeah.
What's that?
We'll grow asparagus in Central Park.
Oh, I love that idea. Right. Watch out. Asparagus bush tour coming up next spring. Yeah, sign up
now. New Jersey royal potatoes.
Okay, well, time to go. So thanks again, and thank you to our sponsor, Hearst Ranch, and our producer and engineer, Jack Inslee and Nat Wiener. And we look forward to seeing you next week.
I would not leave you in times of trouble. We never could have come this far. No love.